Today, we are starting the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and I thought I would cover a little bit of what we have done in the first 17 chapters, some highlights, and also introduce the 18th chapter, which is, even though it's the last chapter, is a very powerful chapter, has a lot of beautiful material in it. It has actually 72 verses, it's one of the larger ones. And so far, we have studied in the 17 chapters. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna must have been a scientist because he has written this Gita as a science project, as a science paper, as a science presentation. Suppose you go to a seminar and somebody is presenting a talk on global warming in a scientific presentation in an international seminar. So the speaker first will say, you know, give us the problem. Okay, global warming is a significant problem because the temperatures have been rising and, you know, all that. So he will first present the problem. Why is global warming a problem? And then after that, then he will introduce, okay, now in this talk today, I'm going to talk about the effects of global warming, the causes of global warming, effects, so how it is deleterious, how we can help solve it, what are the steps we can take to make it better, and how can we not let it, you know, progress further and not let it, you know, ultimately become a catastrophe. And then at the end, the speaker then will end with saying, okay, today we have spoken about global warming. These are the points I covered in my talk. And so he will or she will summarize what they have said. So similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very interesting. It's exactly the same format has been followed. The first chapter is Arjun Vishad Yoga, Arjuna's problem. And it's not only Arjuna's problem. We all have that problem. Arjuna represents all of us. And, a man of the world, a man of the street who is working in the world, competing, you know, and going through a hard situation, and we all go through in our life also. There are some ups and downs, we have some problems, and sometimes the problems seem insurmountable. They could be physical problems, health related, could be emotional stress or intellectual, you know, loss of a job or a failure, or, you know, I lost a contract, a loss of business. So the first chapter talks about the problem. What is the problem? And that is Arjuna's vishad, Arjuna's sorrow. Then from the second chapter, Sri Krishna very beautifully gives us an introduction of what he is going to teach us in the remaining chapter. So the second chapter again has some very, very beautiful shlokas, but it actually introduces the entire summary of the Bhagavad Gita is given as to what Krishna is going to teach us, what he is going to give us in the various chapters. So 13 to 17, he then talks about Arjuna's problem and why it is a problem, how to solve it. And not only he just only devotes himself to Arjuna's problem, but to the entire mankind, you know, what are the problems we encounter in our life and how through various paths we can, various methods through the path of karma yoga, the path of service, path of bhakti, path of love, path of knowledge, through meditation. And then he talks in detail about the gunas, you know, which we, last few weeks we have talked about the sattva, rajas and tamas, and how tamas and rajas can be problems and how we can go from them to sattva. So all these topics are covered very beautifully in chapters 3 to 17. And then the 18th chapter is the summary. 18th chapter is the summary of the Bhagavad Gita. But more than that, there is more things. It's not just a mere summary, but I highlight some of the major points, but also connects the various chapters and some of the points that were not very well covered, Krishna felt, or he felt that needed to be repeated or needed to be emphasized. That's emphasized in the 18th chapter. The Gita is also described, Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda describes it to an aeroplane flight. See, if you have taken, of course, we all have taken numerous aeroplane flights. So you get on the plane and then the air hostess will say, tie your, you know, put on your seat belt and all the instructions will be given. And then the plane leaves the gate and starts taxiing, and then finally it goes to the taxi, and then it goes to the main runway and it picks up speed, you know, very fast, and then it takes off, and then after reaches 32,000 feet, and the captain will announce, "We have reached the highest cruising altitude of 32,000 or 30,000 feet," and then it will cruise for, you know, a few hours till you reach your destination. Say you're going from here to New York, and then the plane, then the captain will say, "Okay, the air hostess, the captain has now started his descent. So put on your seatbelt again." And so then the plane lands, and after the plane lands, they say, "Don't take off your seatbelt yet, you know, keep it on till we have reached the gate for safety." So then the plane will taxi, and finally at the gate, when it stops, then you are free to take off your seatbelt. So similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter is the plane slowly just taxiing from the gate until it gets to the main runway. And then from there, the Gita takes off. From the second chapter, it goes faster and faster and faster. And it takes off to the highest altitude. And from the second to the 15th, 15th is the highest point of the Bhagavad Gita. That is where the supreme knowledge is given. The Purushottam Yoga, the knowledge of who this Supreme Lord is given in beautiful detail. I think the 15th chapter, not only everybody should read again, but everybody should memorize. The verses of the 15th chapter are so sweet, so beautiful, have so much meaning that actually most of us who have been going to the Chinmaya mission camps do end up memorizing the entire 15th chapter, because in the camp they make us, not they make us, but we are asked to chant the entire 15th chapter before lunch and before dinner, before you are served lunch and dinner. So most people have memorized the 15th chapter. Even if you can't memorize, at least reread it, the meanings, because it is the most clear definition of who this Lord is, the Purushottam, the Supreme, is beautifully. Not only that, but in the 15th chapter, how the world came into being, what was the creation theory, everything is given in great detail. So after the 15th chapter, the Gita ends. Gita, then the 16th and 17th chapter, it is descending, it is coming down. Again, does not mean the 16th, the 17th are not important, but the highest knowledge has been given. Now, Krishna is giving us some of the more basic facts. In the 16th, he talks about the Devi and the Asuri, the divine and the devilish people, demonic people. And then in the 17th, he again talks about the Shraddha, the three types of Shraddha, three types of faith, and which we just covered again, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. And the 18th chapter, now the Gita has come down, and just as the pilot is taxiing to the runway, so the 18th chapter is taking us back to our home, to our... So 18th has a lot of points. I'll talk a little bit about what the 18th has. See, the 18th is the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. If you have understood the 18th chapter and well, then you will say, okay, the Gita has been successfully concluded. So not only I have to understand the 18, but I should have understood the previous chapters, which we have been doing over the past few years. And so if I have understood the 17 chapters, then the 18th chapter will be the conclusion of the knowledge for me. Similarly, in our life, we all have a last chapter. We don't know when it will be. You know, it could be next year, it could be 10 years from now, 20 years from now. Sometimes we are informed, you know, the doctor comes and says, "You have terminal cancer, you have only 3 months or 6 months to live." And then you know, okay, now this is my last chapter. But assuming I don't know that, and I don't know how many years I will live, only the Lord knows. So they say, live every day of your life as it is the last chapter. This is going to be the end. And how do I want people to remember me? How do I want my life to be? Is my life successful? Just as the 18th chapter, once you say, okay, Sri Krishna has successfully covered this knowledge beautifully. So similarly, has my life, and my last chapter of my life can only be successful if my earlier chapters have been well lived, have been properly lived, have been properly understood by me. If I have lived a successful life, then I can say, okay, the last chapter of my life is successful. So one has to start living so that my life becomes a successful life. And what is the definition of success? In the world, when you talk, you know, they talk about the, Dale Carnegie or all these authors, or Wayne Dyer and all of these. And then if you look at the books of economics and, politics and all, then the definition of success, if you look at a book of academics, the definition of success is, if it's physics or chemistry, how academically you have advanced, whether you became the head of the department, of that particular university. In economics, it is how much money you have made, how successful you have been. Talking about money, this man was walking along a park and it was a little dark. And so there another man comes out with a gun and says, "Give me all your money." So the man said, "What are you doing? Don't you know I'm an IRS agent?" He says, "Okay, then give me all my money." So economics, the success is how much money you made. In politics, whether you were the president or the governor, in business, whether you were the CEO or head of Google or, Microsoft or Yahoo. So in my life, what is our definition of success? And most of the time, our definition of success is this. How big a house I have, how much wealth I have, what is my net worth, that is always counted. Or sometimes, for mothers, sometimes it is how my children are doing. If my children are doing well, they are successful, then I'm successful. Or my daughter got married, that is a big factor of success. So, but they say that the true measure of success that one get the message from the Gita is, how much have you renounced your ego? To the extent you have reduced your ego, to that extent you are successful. And how do you renounce your ego? Obviously at the feet of the Lord, not at the feet of the politicians or your boss or, but to the extent that I have reduced my ego and surrendered myself to the Lord, to that extent my life has been a success. As long as the I and my is there, then that ego is very powerful. So the message of the Bhagavad Gita is that there is one Lord who is the creator. And if I can work as the Lord's servant, as his agent, and without this I and my surrendering to the Lord, to that extent, my life is successful. So that the success of my life is dependent on to the extent I have reduced my ego. Then the number 18 has a lot of significance in the Mahabharata. As we know, there are 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. The Mahabharata war lasted for 18 days, and the entire Mahabharata of 100,000 verses has 18 parvas, has 18 chapters also. So 18 figures again and again. So what is the importance of 18? There is a method of counting called Katapadi. It's a long name, but it was used by the ancient seers, where it was a very mystical way of indicating numbers and letters. And each letter had a number, like ka, kha, ga. Each letter was given a particular number, and that's how they used to count. And interestingly, 18 was a mysterious number, was always reversed, was counted as 81. 18 was never read as 18, but as 81. And what does 81 stand for? Jaya. 18, 8 is ja, and 1 is ya. So Jaya. So 18th was read as Jaya. In fact, Mahabharata's name some places originally was counted as Jaya. Now Jaya, as we know in Hindi and all lot of Indian languages, means victory. In Sanskrit also it means victory. Jaya, uski jay ho. So the 18th chapter represents the highest victory of good over evil. Because after the 18th chapter, Arjuna says, okay, now I'm ready. And without Arjuna, the Pandavas, would have lost the war. So Jaya represents the victory of good over evil, the victory of divinity over demonic forces. And so that was the other significance of 18. And as I said, if you're reading a mystery novel, you know, you're reading maybe Perry Mason or Alfred Hitchcock or any of these, you know, authors who write all these novels of mysteries and you know, all these. What happens is in the last chapter of the book, generally the author will then give the mystery. Who was the murderer? Or if you're watching the movie Beesal Baad, then towards the end of the movie, they will say, you know, I remember in our medical college, people were so bad, they would go watch the movie on Friday, and then Saturday they would write on the board, you know, the murderer is, and they would put his name. And then if you don't know the name, they would put Langda so that you don't forget. So they used to ruin the movie for everybody. That was just kids' tricks. So here also, the author will tell us the what is the mystery in this whole novel, and he will connect all the threads. You know, what happened in the first chapter of the book, second chapter, all those threads will be connected in the final chapter, and the mystery will be solved, and all those puzzles throughout the book will be solved. And so similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, the 18th chapter is the chapter that reveals the mysteries. There are a lot of points that some of them may not have been very clarified in the 17th chapter. So those are revealed. Some of the loose threads are connected. Some of the points are emphasized. So 18th helps us to understand the Bhagavad Gita better. Then the 18th chapter is called Moksha Sannyas Yoga. So liberation through renunciation. Now why does Krishna call that? Because if you remember, Arjuna's original question was, should I take up or should I give up? Because as we know, Arjuna was standing between the two armies, and he sees on the one hand the Kauravas, you know, who are evil. There's, you know, Duryodhan and all his brothers and all. But then he also sees his grandfather, his teacher, his, you know, some of the, you know, the people near and dear. And then he starts thinking war will be a problem. And so he asks Krishna, you know, on the one hand, I see some of the evil people also, but I also see some good people on the side of the Kauravas. And you're telling me that it is my duty to fight. So should I take up this war or should I give up? Because in the scriptures, he has read the Upanishads and they say, you know, sannyas, you have to renounce and give up, you know. And in the Ishavasya Upanishad also, it says, in nomine plissit tena tyaktena bhunjita. So renunciation has been glorified. So should I give up? And he's not clear. And that's where the whole discussion starts, because he asks Krishna this question. And that's the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Shishyasteham shadhi mam tvam prapanna. I am your disciple. At this moment, I am no longer your friend. You are no longer my driver. Otherwise, the driver is inferior to the king, you know, because Arjuna is a king, prince, and Krishna is his charioteer. So he says, you are no longer my charioteer. You are not even my friend, because he and Arjuna were very close friends. He said, at this time, I'm your disciple. He falls at his feet and says, please teach me, what is my duty? Where am I supposed to go? So the 18th chapter is the final, where it talks about moksha sannyas. Through renunciation, you will achieve that liberation, that highest knowledge. It's very interesting. Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda one time was giving an interview to an Asian TV reporter, a lady reporter from an Asian TV channel, and she was asking him a lot of questions and in detail about what his mission is, and some questions related to Vedanta and all. And he says, Swamiji, she says, can you give us your final message? He says, my final message is undress and embrace. So her jaw fell down. What? You know, Swami is saying undress and embrace. So Gurudev says, undress from the ego and embrace the Lord. Because it is the ego that is covering us, and that is an obstacle between me and the Lord. It is, otherwise everything is, you know, the Lord. Isha Vasya Mitagams. Everything is the Lord, but it is my ego, the sense of that I am somebody special, I am great, I am this, I am that. I and mine is the one. So the moment you undress from your ego, the Lord is available. Lord is actually within us, but it is our ego, our vasanas, our tendencies that separate us from Him, and that separate us from everybody else. The ego is what makes me see enemies and friends, and I like and I don't like. So only, that's why even Krishna, you know, of course he was a little, small little boy, when he stole the clothes of the gopis, they show him on the tree. The symbolism of that is the same thing, that if you want to approach the Lord, you have to be uncovered. You have to not have your hang-ups and, you know, egoistical principles. So that is the message that is also emphasized in the 18th chapter. In fact, the Ishavasya Upanishad, of course, we have covered it. Vimalji has covered it very beautifully. But the first verse is, a lot of you must have know the word, because it was, the first verse was Mahatma Gandhi's favorite. He says, Ishavasya Midagam Sarvam Yat Kinchit Dagatyan Jagat Tena Tyatena Bhunjitaha Magrida Kasya Svidhanam. So he says, Ishavasya Midagam Sarvam. This whole world is pervaded by Ishvara. Ishavasyam idagam yad kinchit jagatyan jagat. Whatever you see in this universe is nothing but my beloved Lord, whether it's my Krishna or my Buddha or my Jesus, or everything is that one Lord, the Father in heaven. I'm seeing everywhere, but it is covered. The Lord is covered. Even though he's there everywhere, we don't see him. We don't experience him. And we see this world of matter. And we give reality to that world. So he says, tena tyaktena bhunjita. So sacrifice and enjoy. Only by giving up, by renouncing, you can enjoy the world. And you can enjoy that divine glory, the divine joy, only by renouncing. Again, by renouncing the world, we do not mean that we should all become sannyasis and put on orange clothes and sit in the Himalayas and meditate. We can't do that. You know, there may be a few people who have that great wisdom. So while I am working in the world, I work without attachment. I work with a sense of detachment. Again, detachment, people think as, oh, that means I should not love anybody. I should not love my children. I should not. No, we are not saying that. In fact, there is more love in detachment. The love is not only for my children, but for everybody's children. The love is universal, because everything is that divine Lord. And also, detachment means not depending on something for my joy. Like we had talked last week also, do not put the key of your happiness in somebody else's pocket. That's what Gurudev used to say. So when I mean detachment means I work, but I do not depend on a thing or a person to give me happiness, because I find happiness within. I work out of happiness. I don't work for happiness. There's a difference. One is I work for happiness, that getting this will give me joy, and then I become dependent. Either it's a person or a thing or an object or a job or a person. But if I work out of happiness, out of the inner joy, inner peace, the Lord's presence, then my action becomes divine. And then that is called working without attachment. And that's what they say. Once you can do that, then you can enjoy your work. The problem with the work is we get so attached. It is my job. I do it. And then the problem comes. Then the conflicts arise. But if I say it is happening through me, I am not the doer, the Lord is working, then you can enjoy the work. And then you can also enjoy the Lord's presence. So that's what it says, Ishavasyam Idagam Sarvam. And then, as we said, this chapter is sannyas. So renounce, we actually renounce every day. So when do I renounce? Well, at the end of the day, when you go to bed, you slowly renounce everything. You renounce your thoughts, you renounce your ideas, you renounce your emotions, you even renounce your body identification. As long as the thought is there, you know, I have some problem at work or some stressful situation, then you cannot sleep. But as you slowly renounce the thoughts and you relax your body, so every day we renounce. So this renunciation will be explained in a lot more detail in the 18th chapter. In fact, our, you know, four stages of life, you know, Brahmacharya, Grihastha Ashram, Vanaprastha and Sannyas, Brahmacharya being the student age. So they have divided human life into four quadrants. The first 25 years is student life, where I study and get the knowledge. And then 25 to 50 is our productive time, where you work hard and, you know, you succeed and achieve a lot. And then after 50, they want you to start slowly slowing down. Now, of course, it has changed, you know, in those days, maybe. But nowadays, but whatever it is, whether in the 50s or in the 60s, at least you should gradually start withdrawing your attention, then not work as hard and start spending more time in spiritual knowledge, spiritual pursuits, and spend some hours every, and especially once your children have gone to college, have left the home, then we have more time to devote to spirituality. And that's why they say after that, after age 50, definitely, even earlier, if you can start studying and learning, it's very good. But and that's even better. The sooner you start, the better. And there were so many people, we see so many saints, even at teenage years, they were so evolved. But at least after age 50 is definitely required to spend more time. And then the last 25 years after age 75, whatever time you live, that's supposed to be sannyas, renunciation, where at that time, then you have nothing to do with the world. I do not interfere in my children, grandchildren. Don't worry too much. Just whatever I need to maintain myself, keep that. And then the rest of the time is 100% spirituality. So that's what called sannyas. And that's why our masters who divided life also said that slowly, slowly after age 50, you have to start turning your attention away from the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts towards the Lord, the Creator. And then there are two questions that I don't know, we may not have time to cover today, but I want you to think about. First one is, what can I not live with? And don't say my spouse, that we already know. What are the other things I cannot live with? And the second one is, what can I not live without? Food, yes, food, but there are so many things that are so, my dog, that's number one. You know, one my cat. So that to the extent that I say these are the things I cannot live with. Boss. I cannot live with boss, this, that. Then that much I have likes and dislikes. That much I. And to the extent I cannot live without. I cannot live without this. I cannot live without that. To that extent I am bound. To that extent I am. So that's why Arjuna asks in the first verse, please tell me what is Tyaga and what is Sannyas. So we'll start the first verse next week. And because in the throughout the Bhagavad Gita, the word Tyaga and Sannyas comes all the time. Krishna uses it many places and uses it sometimes interchangeably. But here Arjuna is asking him directly, please tell me the exact meaning of Tyaga and Sannyas. So that we shall cover, start the first verse next week. We have a couple of minutes. Any questions or comments about anything we have covered today? Okay, yeah. We had briefly did that when we did Om Tat Sat. But Purusha represents the transcendental reality that we call Brahman, which I cannot see, cannot hear, cannot taste, smell, touch, cannot even think of, cannot even contemplate, cannot be described. Even the books cannot describe it. Even the saints are not able to describe it. So that is Purusha, that is the supreme Brahman, the supreme reality. When that supreme reality takes on the role of creator, sustainer, and destroyer, it becomes Ishvara. Ishvara is the what we call as Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, you know, the creator, sustainer, destroyer. So that same transcendental reality, which we are not able to comprehend, then it takes on the role of these three and then creates and sustains and destroys the world, the entire universe. It is that same consciousness, but working through Prakriti. Prakriti means the creative power, Maya, which is, so together, Purush and Prakriti, they together create this universe, so that becomes Ishvara. So Ishvara is the, and that's why all these forms that we see are forms of that Ishvara. Whether you see the Mother Goddess, or you see Ganpati, or you see Krishna, or Shiva, or all that, they are those forms of that same Brahman, but taking on a form that we can identify with, that we can love. I can, when I see Krishna, I, you know, think of him playing the flute, when I see Shiva, and so we can relate to that. And so that is the difference between. So Ishvara is the more visible or understandable expression of the Lord. And there are stories, you know, Ishwara, like Vishnu takes avatar, takes manifestation and appears, and, you know, as Krishna, Ram, you know, all of those different, the 10 avatars of Vishnu. Shiva, there are stories related to Shiva, there are stories related to Brahmaji. So there are a lot of Puranic stories related to all these gods. And so the Puranas are full of stories. So that is the Ishwaras, that aspect of.
What were you saying about number 18? Like after 18th chapter, everything is, the evil got destroyed and then.
Right. It's the victory of good over evil. That's where the knowledge comes to Arjuna, and then he, you know, is ready to fight. Yeah, the 18 means Jaya, because it's 8 and 1. Ja and Ya, because it's done in a very mystical way. 18 is a mystical number. They reverse it.
81.
Yeah, 81. It's a system of, very complicated system of mathematics.
So number 18 would be lucky?
Yeah.
Or 81 would be lucky?
Actually, 18 is lucky. Actually, 9 is the lucky number.
Because they add together.
Yeah, 9 is the luckiest number, because every multiple of 9 is 9. Shiva is one of the manifestations of Ishvara. Shiva is the destroyer. But what happens is that for each devotee, for like some devotee, Shiva is the supreme. And in Shiv Puran, they say Shivji is the highest and all the others are below him, whether it's Krishna or Vishnu or Brahmaji. While in Devi Puran, if you look at Devi Puran, you say Devi is the supreme and everybody else is below. So it depends on whom you love. Like for somebody, if you read Ganpati Atharva Shirsha, you are the Brahman, you are the supreme, you are the highest, everything came from you, you are the creator, you are the sustainer, you are the destroyer. So each devotee for that particular form of Lord is dear to that person, and that becomes, it does not mean that one is superior or inferior, it's one whom you love. The example they give is like a lady gets married in a large family where there are 8 or 9 brothers and sisters. So now she loves her husband the most, obviously, but then the other brothers and sisters, she loves them and respects them. There is love and respect for all the other brothers and sisters, but my husband is the one that is dearest to me, or my wife. So similarly, my Ishta Devta is dear to me, but I love and respect all other forms of the Lord. But it's good to pick one as your Ishta Devta. That is, that way you develop a closeness, a love, a relationship of love to that Lord.
Is there a difference between Isha and Ishvara?
No, it is the same. It is just shortening of that. That's why this is not Isha Vasyam Idagam Sarva.
So the Bhagavad Gita was chanted before the war.
Yes.
Then when does the Vishwarupam darshan?
You know, the 11th chapter, actually, yeah, before the war,
but
yes.
At that time, Arjuna was already in the process of the war, right?
No. This is before the. This is when the they're still standing between the two armies.
He's still debating.
Yeah. And then he's after the 11th chapter. He's convinced now that this is. Until then, he used to think of Krishna as my driver or my friend or my relative. He was his brother-in-law also. But then after the 11th chapter, he now looks upon him as the Lord, as the
after
supreme.
After the 18th chapter only. The war went for 18 days.
Right. Yeah. Yes, he ends with the end of the 18th chapter, Sanjay says that I'm so blessed I could see the Vishwarupa due to Vyasa Prasada, due to his blessings I got the Divya Drishti. And he describes to Dhritarashtra not only the 18 chapters but also the war. The entire war is described by him sitting far away. He is able to see the entire war that is going on, and describing to the blind king who is, you know, fighting and what's happening. Yeah.
Purusha is the consciousness,
right? Right.
But Purush means man, right?
Purush means man. So again, it depends on the context. But here, the Purush is man, like Stri and Purush. Stri and that is male and female. But at the highest level, it's Purush and Prakriti. So spirit and matter.
I don't think Purusha is considered man. It's Purushartham is something.
Purush in Hindi, like, yeah, Purusha depends on the context.
No, content.
Yeah.
You're taking like literally Purusha and Stri. No, Purushartham is like a woman can be like Purushartham. Like they say, like in Rani Rudramadevi, she's a woman, but she's like a.
Right.
She has Purushartham
right.
in her.
Yeah, yeah, that has. Yeah. Has
it depends
has
on
those,
how you take the custom.
Right.
It's not a
yeah.
female gender, male gender.
Right, right. No, it's not that.
Yeah, where man can be. Like, I don't know what I'm saying. I mean, here.
Yeah, no, they yeah, they could be have more
they
love
be,
and
yes,
be more
yes.
compassionate
more
and more gentle.
Nature,
yeah, more
or
gentle
man,
and nurturing.
Like Sri Rama
yeah.
is like more kind of motherly nature.
Yeah, that's why this,
yes,
yeah, Purush Suktam, he talks about the Supreme Brahman, that consciousness. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasra Akshastrama. So it, Purush Suktam describes that, that Supreme Purush. And from him came the whole, Tasmat Sarva Uta, you know, Richa Samagni Chakni Chanda Gomsi. So all the Vedas came out of him, the entire universe came out of that. So that is Purush Suktam, describes the process of creation. And with the closing prayers, Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makasche Dukkha. Om Shanti Shanti. Shanti Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Hari Om.